This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conquers3 on Twitter. And I'm here with my good friend Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. This is Twin Peaks Investing Podcast number 47. It's approximately 6 p.m. in the UK and it's the 21st of the 4th, 2021. We're in April. And we were talking last podcast about the ISA season and how it started and ripped roared. And we were talking about, could we see FTSE 100 in 7,000? And we did hit that, Pete. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm all right. Obviously, I'm still got this ongoing ailment, which is a little bit frustrating. But I actually feel really good today. So that's one of the things that I find really frustrating, that some days it's really bad and annoying and other days it's not so bad. So anyway, the market has been really perky last week. I mean, it was lovely, wasn't it, last week? But yesterday, so this is Wednesday we're recording this, and Tuesday, that it really came off the boil a bit. But today, you know, there's buyers around again, and there's plenty of blue on the screen, and things look a bit perky again. Not perky, but things, you know, they're not falling away, so that's positive.
Yeah, it fell 2% yesterday, and I think people were a little bit taken aback by it. It was like, oh, you know, the market's only going up, and it's like, you know, ladies and gents, this is what happens to the markets. It fluctuates. You know, we're in a situation now where we've managed to touch that magic 7,000. I think we went just above 7,035 or something like that on the 16th, and then, you know, we get to the close of the week, we start another week, and then we open up Monday, not so bad. Tuesday, not so good. You know what I mean? And wallop. And I think lots of people were just a little bit taken aback. They were very, very quiet on, you know, because Pete and I are on Twitter a lot. There was very, very quiet last night, I thought, with regards to people's comments and commentary. I think people were a bit stunned, Pete.
Yeah, do you know, it's funny though, because when you actually look at the move on the FTSE 100, which appeared to have a really big move, I think a lot of that was down to the weightings, because I noticed that RDSB, you know, Shell, and I think a whole Glencore and a miner, they were hit quite hard. So I think, you know, when you get the mining stocks and the oil stocks hit hard, because of the weightings, it has quite an impact on the FTSE 100. It sort of skews things a bit. So, you know, I think that was coming into play as well.
Yeah, the other aspect of it, Pete, as well, was that BATS, British American Tobacco, and Imperial Brands, IMB, both got hit as well, and they're quite substantial weightings as well, because there was some talk about they're going to try and reduce the sale or stop the sale of menthol cigarettes and also reduce the levels of nicotine in cigarettes. So they were both smashed by more than 5-6% as well. So I think they impacted the FTSE as well as the others.
Yeah. So, you know, and the thing is, I wrote in my blog at the weekend that, you know, you could, that I produce loads of charts every Sunday night, usually, showing all these various things. And it was so obvious that loads of them were really overbought. I mean, I think it was a FTSE 250 was on an RSI of like 78 or 77. These are really high levels, because an RSI of 70 is seen as overbought. So, you know, it was obvious that some sort of consolidation, which can mean a bit of a pullback, or maybe it can mean going sideways for a while just to unwind those overbought situations. It was obvious it had to happen.
I don't like using the word of obvious it's going to happen, Peter. Mm. The difficulty is that
Let's say highly likely.
I think the difficulty is with the markets is that it's been overdue getting back to 7,000, right? So we were, what, a year and a half, 18 months, whatever it took to get back there. But you look at the time frame of X amount of years, and the FTSE 100 has gone nowhere, Pete. You know,
From
when it first hit 7,000 to where it is now, it's like, how long has that taken? And we're just treading water. Everyone else is going to new highs across some of Europe, but most of the US indices have all smashed new highs, you know. So we're just sitting there languishing. It's like, is it our time yet? You know, and then the minute people start to get excited, as they were last week, it gets to 7,000 and then reverses 2%, and people going, oh, you know, just takes the wind out of your sails a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting with the way that the UK market appears to have lagged, because it's only really the FTSE 100 that has lagged, and it's also I think AIM is a long way down.
Mm.
What its, you know, real peaks were many, many, many moons ago. But other than that, I mean, the FTSE 250, we talked about this last week, I think that's making new all-time highs, or it's very near it. And I think FTSE small caps have done pretty well. So I think the FTSE 100 has been sort of subdued by its own, really because of those weightings, because, you know, the oil stocks have been suffering and miners, and, you know, a lot of these things have not had a great time. And I think that's really skewed it. And then you've had all the Brexit stuff, which didn't help. And, you know, there's so many reasons why the UK market would have dragged. And I do feel that the FTSE 100 is starting to play a bit of catch up, and it needs to.
It needs to. And I think in time it will, Pete. But I'm hoping it doesn't do so for the wrong reasons. But I suspect there might be an element of it, in a sense of, you know, a lot of our stocks on the FTSE 100 and 250 are lowly valued in comparison to their very richly valued US peers. And I suspect there's going to be lots of deep-pocketed companies, not just from the US, but from China, Japan and elsewhere, who are going to come a-calling over the next 6 months to a year. And I think I've said this to you before on this podcast. I suspect we're going to see more takeovers going forward, Pete, of some of the companies that we would rather stay in, you know, stay UK-listed and not just be bought up as a bolt-on for some rather large behemoth. But I suspect that's what we're going to see, Pete, going forward.
Just an interesting point, because I may be wrong, but when I think about all of the M&A, you know, mergers and acquisition behaviour that there has been in the last year or so, I don't think there's been any real mega mergers from the UK, have there? I don't remember anything really, really huge from the FTSE 100 being a bid target and actually being taken over. Can you think of any?
Can't think of any off the top of my head at the minute.
Do you know what I mean, though? So that's... Because in a way, that often marks the real peak, doesn't it? When you get a completely ridiculous deal, you know, that's so ridiculous, it's just ridiculously ridiculous, you know? And I don't think we've really seen that yet. So that's a treat to look forward to.
Yeah, that you just laid it out there, Pete. You know that, you know it's going to be happening now, don't you?
I guess a good one for that would be the miners, wouldn't it? I mean, they're all saying, oh, we're not going to do any stupid M&A anymore, and we're going to be returning cash. I wonder if that is going to be the case as the train moves on down the track, you know?
Well, the thing is, the miners, I mean, it's funny you say that, they're in a very, very good position at the minute, because, you know, you remember, what, 3, 4, 5 years ago, how laden with debt they were, Pete? They've reduced that debt significantly now, so I suspect you could see some mergers, whether it be a mega merger or not, I don't know. But definitely the smaller ones are looking to play catch up, and they're looking to get together, especially the ones that are overseas. There's a few little mergers going on there. So that'd be a very interesting space, mate. Definitely to keep an eye on.
Another thing I noticed with the markets, if you look at the Dow Jones, you know, the Dow, that's been making new all-time highs. If you look at the S&P 500, it's been making new all-time highs. If you look at the NASDAQ 100, which is just the 100 biggest tech companies in the US, that's been making new all-time highs. But if you look at the NASDAQ composite, which is a load, I don't, is it 500 stocks? I think it might be. That one might have done a double top. Can you see it on the chart? I don't know if you've got a chart near
I haven't
you.
got a chart up at the minute, Pete. Just let me just have a quick look. One
I think
sec.
I've got one on my phone here, actually. Yeah, I have. NASDAQ comp. So
Right.
yeah, the NASDAQ comp about 2 months ago hit a peak. And it was up around, say, well, I don't know, four, just over 14,000 or
Yeah,
something.
14,175. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just the other day, last week, it hit almost the same level and then it dropped back. Now, if it can keep rising from here, then we'll avoid a double top. If it drops from here, then that would be a double top forming. I mean, it's not over because it can go sideways for some time. So it doesn't mean we all need to panic, but it's just an interesting thing I had noticed.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's got support. NASDAQ comp's got support at
Yeah.
12,600. And if that goes, then you're on your way down to 12. And if that goes, you're down to 11. So yeah, but it's, I mean, it's from its highs, Pete, it's only 300 points from its all-time highs. And that, you know what the US is like. That could be done this week, you know, if it
Yeah,
want, if something
yeah.
positive came out. You know, we've still got a few earnings to come out this season, this week and this month, for some large companies out there. So if a couple of them come out with something, you know, mega, the Nasdaq will just go pop. It can do 300 points in a couple of days, mate.
There was something else I noticed on the NASDAQ, technically. This concept of bearish RSI divergence. So that's where you get the share price chart is rising, yeah, but the RSI chart, and I'm talking about the daily RSI, it's like its peaks are getting successively lower. So it's like the share price is rising, but the RSI is sort of falling. And that is evident on the NASDAQ composite. And that can be quite a good predictor of something happening ahead. That's bearish.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
It's just something to watch. I mean, it's not right every time. None of these things are, but it's just other factors. And then throw in the fact that, a lot of NASDAQ stocks, particularly at the smaller end, are looking a bit pricey.
But Pete, this goes back to what we said before. You know, some of these tech stocks have been looking pricey for a long, long time. You know, you've had people out there shorting Apple at one stage, shorting Amazon at one stage, shorting Tesla more recently. That's what having so many shorts on it. And, you know, it shook them all off. You know, it's rolled over a little bit recently for a variety of different reasons. But, you know, a lot of people have been hurt shorting stocks. This is the thing. You know, if you're getting margin called on a stock because you've shorted it, then, you know, it's not a good place to be, mate. Because, you know, the problem is that you're there shorting the stocks, you think, oh, it's overvalued, it's overvalued, it's overvalued. And then pop comes out with some news and it's up 5, 10. You know, all these people that are shorting it are creating that additional spike in the share price, Pete. You know, or that company is being attacked by another company in the sense of, I want to merge with you, I'm offering this premium price. It goes up 5, 10, 20% on a premium takeover. And you as a shorter are getting absolutely smashed across the rocks again.
Do you know,
So it's hard, Pete. Hard to short. I think shorters are at the mercy, really. I think you're better off sometimes finding a stock that's got a bit of momentum and going long, you know. But that's how the companies make the most money, don't they? These spread betting companies.
I think you've absolutely nailed it there. I think in a market as bullish like as this is, I just don't see the point of shorting individual stocks. I mean, I think there might be occasions where hedging a portfolio by going short on an index is valid, and I do that myself, but only sparingly I'm trying to do that. But in terms of shorting individual stocks, I just think it's so dangerous to do.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you,
And
Pete.
it's like you said, it's like there's no need to. Why bother shorting stocks when you can make so much money going long?
I think
That's a
part
waste of effort.
of that, Pete, I think part of it though is that you and I see stocks and we just scratch our heads going, "What is going on there? You know, how can that be that price?" that price is ridiculous in comparison to the revenue. That price is ridiculous. Look at the sheer size of that PE on that stock, and it just beggars belief, Pete. So we then think to ourselves, right, okay, that's it. I'm done here, right? I'm going short this stock, right? I'm going short Tesla. And we're
Yeah,
now shorting it at
I've been out
600.
on that one.
We're going short at 600. It goes to 620, 650, 680, 700. It can't never, it could, oh, this is ridiculous. It can't go to 800. Bosh, it gets to 800. And you're there going, well, if you've got any money left, you know what I mean? You're going, so it's just hard work, mate. I mean, I've got a list of stocks which I've been having this little discussion with myself, Pete, about reopening. And I know you want to talk about it in a little while. My Spreadbet account, because there's a couple of stocks, Pete, that I'm looking at across the FTSE and across AIM, and I'm going, that is just madness.
Oh, so you're thinking like a short, yeah?
I'm thinking about. I haven't done a Spreadbet short for years. Yeah, I haven't done a spread bet probably for a couple of years because I haven't bothered with it account at all. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? At some point when this rolls over, it's going to get absolutely massacred. You know, the last stock I wanted to short was probably Fevertree, you know, when it was in its 30s and then got to 40. And I didn't, you know. And I know what's going to happen. If I turn around and say, oh, I'm shorting that stock, there'll be hell to pay on Twitter because that particular stock or that particular stock is going to be loved by somebody or other or a group of core of people. And how dare me short that stock? But I can go long it. I can say I'm going long it and they'll be all happy and rejoicing. Dare I say I go short it? Oh, crikey.
Even if it's completely madness to go long, yeah. Do you know, it's funny, actually, talking about a stock that looks... I don't know. I'm in two minds about this one. Actually, I'm going to have a look at the chart as I'm talking. You know S4 Capital, yeah?
Yeah.
Now, I get... the story, you know, it makes sense to have online marketing and all that stuff, and the world's going digital and all this kind of thing, and I totally get that. But what I'm struggling with is that, you know, apart from Martin Sorrell and the fantastic, you know, kudos that he brings and whatever, I look at the valuation and stuff and I just think, what on earth? So you're roughly talking a £3 billion market capitalization, yeah? And you're talking sales, so we're not talking profit, we're talking sales, right? Of about 342 million in the last results. Now, I can't help thinking that is a very inflated valuation. I mean, you know, if you're doing 342 million of sales, what are you going to be doing in terms of profit? Are you going to be doing 50 million maybe at the most? I'm probably being generous there, aren't I? And yet you've got a 3 billion market cap. I mean, if you're talking 50 million profit on 3 billion market cap, it's just, I can't even work the PE out. It's too big, you know what I mean? And I can't help thinking that all of the continual acquisitions and share issuance and debt and all the rest of it, he's hiding what's really going on. And I think if I had that stock, I think, you know, a lot of people have done really well on it, and fair play to people, well done, you know, that's brilliant. But what I would say is don't get too greedy and perhaps just trim a bit off, because I just think it just looks a bit precarious to me.
It's an interesting company, Pete, and I interviewed Sir Martin Sorrell last year.
Oh, you did? Yeah, you did.
Yeah, he's an absolutely fascinating, fascinating character. Yeah. And he has Good. Got the media network. I don't want to say in the palm of his hand, but he was Mr. Media, wasn't he, back in the day? And he still is. And for me, S4 Capital is a pure digital play on media. And a lot of these behemoths have got so much additional cost which that company doesn't have. So it's a pure tech play on media. Is it worth 3 million? I don't know, Pete. You know,
3 billion.
Yes, yeah, sorry. It's up nearly 200% in the past 12 months. Yeah. He uses the valuation of the company and then goes to purchase in stock that the next purchase, 50% of it is always in stock. And then it's a case of we're buying you, and you're buying into my company's ethos. You're not flipping the shares after a year or 3 years. This is it. You're part of this, and that's part of the conversation that they're having. So these companies are bought in, and they're staying in as part of the company, not looking to flip, buy, and sell out after a couple of years. And it's interesting. It's a very interesting model, Pete, and it's worked thus far. Interestingly, you've got I think it's Piper Jeffries has got a price target of something like £7 on the stock as we speak, Pete. So
what are they now?
£5.80 or something daft like that.
Okay, that's a bit more. Yeah.
And Morgan Stanley got it at £7. £7 price target, and what's Jeffries got it at? They've reduced theirs from £6.70 to £6. Have they recently bought another one as well, Strikeforce or something like that?
Oh, they're buying all the time. I mean,
I think, mate. It's very acquisitive. It's a model that's worked before, and he wants to get that company, S4, bigger or as big as WPP, which he built over umpteen years. And you know what, Pete? Having listened to him, having researched him, he's the sort of guy that could do it. He really could.
Yeah, no, it's fair play. I mean, I guess if you're looking for something in that space, in that digital marketing space and whatever, I mean, even WPP might be worth looking at, because it's shifting more towards digital. But better ones perhaps is... NFC, Next 15 Communications. It's a smaller one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's also the Mission Group, TMG, which used to be the Mission Marketing. I think that one's quite interesting. They're both small ones, but,
yeah.
But, you know, they could... I think if I was a buyer today, they would be more interesting to me than S4, which looks like a lot of the good, easy, lower risk gains have been had. And now it's getting to the stage where, okay, if I held it, I'd probably hold it, and I might trim a bit off. But I don't think I'll be buying it up here.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what we were saying before, Pete. You know, we've been fortunate enough to have had a really, really significant bounce since last March, April time. Yeah, there's very few stocks that are, you know, that have done badly over the past 12 months, share price wise, unless they're absolutely, you know, diabolical companies. You know, and we'll exclude, you know, AstraZeneca out of that diabolical company because it's not done so well over the past 12 months. But
it's not today nicely, mate.
It's coming back a bit.
I was reading a good mate of mine, Guy Gudeidos, I think his name is, also I never know how to pronounce it. Guy, he sent me something from that Jim Cramer had written, talking about how healthcare stocks had sort of been left behind a bit, and that healthcare stocks might be worth looking at again. Now, we all know Jim Cramer's a bit of a character and stuff, but he does get some calls bang on dead right. And I think there could be a lot of sense in that. And if you look at AstraZeneca and you look at Glaxo, they've both really had shocking years when everything else has done really well. And there's nice, big, solid, value, defensive, healthy kind of plays. You know, they're probably worth looking at.
They probably are, Pete. I've got my fill of that sort of space, and I'm more in the tech space. I'll tell you about a stock that I've bought, which is not necessarily a tech stock, but more of a finance stock a bit later on.
Yeah.
But before I do that, Pete, I wanted to talk and thank all of our listeners. Firstly, for our fantastic feedback that we keep getting, and we have got from people this week, and bizarrely, I don't know who you are or where you are. Well, I do know some of you because you've sent us DMs, and you've sent us Twitter replies. Some of you actually loved Peter's joke.
Yeah,
all two of them. Dealer's joke, I'm like, really, guys, ladies, what's that about?
Oh dear. Oh, that's the only laugh that's ever heard.
Mate, so, you know, so what I was going to say, and I had this conversation with Pete, you know what? If you've got some good jokes, right, what we'd ask you to do is send them via to DM them to Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. DM him, right? Don't put it on open Twitter. And then Pete can have a little look through some of those jokes and maybe share the best ones occasionally,
I'll
just to lift spirits going forward.
I'll use my incredible skills at joke delivery to make sure that they really hit the spot with a punchline.
Absolutely. The other aspect of what I wanted to say thank you for as well, ladies and gents, was just the sheer number of you individuals following our last conversation about the Twin Peaks Challenge and us raising money for the Memphis Charity for Disabled Children. We had at the time 23 supporters and donations. Two of those were Pete and I, so we had 21 in effect. We've now doubled that number almost. We've now got 45 supporters, excluding me and Pete, that's 43 that we've got. And we've now moved on from the total of, I think it was £1,080, I think was the last total. We've now moved up to £1,515.80, excluding gift aid. So I just wanted to thank all of you that have made a donation. Some of you have done it anonymously. Some of you have said your names and given a little comment. One of you, LR, has said, love your podcast. Your honest and candid discussions on the markets and mental well-being, etc., are a great tonic. Plus the odd gem to go and diligence. Keep up the good work, guys. So thank you for those comments and thank you for the donations. And hopefully we can do the charity some good by raising a significant more amount going forward. So if you're thinking about donating, please do so. And if you can spare a pound going forward to the charity, every pound counts towards this charity and just surviving and helping people in the community. So if you can, just find the Just Giving page, justgiving.com/fundraising Twin Peaks Challenge, and make a donation. That'd be very much appreciated. Thank you.
Yeah, and the other way you can find it is if you go to my website on the www.wheeliedealer2.weebly.com. If you go on there and go to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast page, right at the top, there is a link that will take you to it. And thank you to everyone who's donated, and thank you to everyone who's going to donate and whatever. And, you know, it's let's be fair, a lot of us are making money very easily at the moment, and you know it's good to give a bit back. And remember, you are appeasing the market gods, and if you look after the market gods, they'll look after you. That's really important to remember.
That's a very, very good point there, Pete. I mean,
not that I'm even remotely religious or superstitious or anything like that.
Well, I am religious, mate. That's how I've been brought up. But I think part of it as well, Pete, is that, you know, we were talking about financial freedoms last week, and one of the most important aspects of financial freedom to me, other than the time to do whatever I want, is what I do in and around my community, locally and nationally, all the different charitable causes and other aspects of what I do in the community. That's what's more important to me. That's where my passion is, you know.
So, well, yeah, that's something you enjoy doing, and
I love it, Pete. Yeah. I mean, the thing for me, and I had a conversation with one of the guys I've been working with for many, many years, and it's really, really important, really, that this thing about no one gets left behind. Lots of people have been left behind already, Pete. We were having the conversation just before we came on air. You know, it's one of the charities that I work with are dealing with homelessness and mental health. It's staggering, Pete, you know, and it's not just people who had mental health issues before or were homeless before. Because of COVID and because of lockdown, lots of people are stressed, they've got levels of anxiety, don't want to return to work, they've become homeless. We've got a big, big issue going forward, Pete, in our society regarding people and the people that have unfortunately been left behind. You know, we talked about the self-employed people before, Pete, who've not had any financial support whatsoever. The vast majority of them had nothing.
Oh, I just feel for these, like these people who are running small businesses and that. It must just be horrendous. I mean, we were talking actually before we started doing the recording of this podcast. We were talking about the idea of having sort of hobbies and interests and things you do outside of your investing life and your family life and your work life and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm a real big believer in this. I think I think there's a real danger with, I think there's a lot of us who are sort of like passionate hobbyists with our investments, and we really enjoy doing it. We absolutely love doing it. And I think that in itself can be quite dangerous. And it's like, you know, you can end up doing too much of it. I mean, I know so many people who spend their lives sat in front of a screen every second of the day, looking at their stocks and putting on trades and taking off trades and putting on trades and taking off trades and doing all this stuff. And basically just all they're doing is frying their brains, and they're not making any more money through doing it. Or they might be making a little bit more money, but what's the point? You know, it's like you're wasting your life. You're burning your life away. Get and find another interest outside of investing. Like me, go down the pub, you know, just do something different and just get away from it and just give your brain space to think about other things. It will make you a better investor. It will make you a better trader.
Agreed. Agreed with that wholeheartedly, Pete. Even just going for a walk into the countryside, mate, you know, bathe in nature, do that as often as you possibly can and just, you know, be amongst and away from every single sort of electrical device that you can be for half an hour, you know?
Just get away from all the noise and get away from the everyday life and just think about other things. It definitely helps.
Yeah, it sure does. Sure does.
You wanted to talk about selling things, didn't you?
I did a little bit. I think, you know, given what we were talking about when we first started this conversation about how the markets are doing and the markets have been doing well and so on and so forth, I think there's so much written, Pete, about how to buy, how to use fundamental analysis, how to use technical analysis. But I just wanted to talk briefly about when to sell. I think it's that discussion which we very rarely have as investors. And I think it's something we struggle with. You know, when do we see something as overvalued? When are we being objective regarding a particular stock? You know, it's going up, and therefore we're like, oh, it's great. But I think what we have to do sometimes is be mindful. And there's loads of old sayings, you know, about various things and phrases like we sell the rips and buy the dips. Have you heard that one, Pete? Yeah,
I hadn't actually heard that. I like
it's
that.
Very, it's a very, very What's American
it?
One.
Buy the rips and sell the dips.
Yeah. Let your winners run, but cut your losers short. You heard that one?
Yeah. We all know that one.
No one ever went broke taking a profit. You heard that one?
Oh, I just think it's such nonsense. Yeah. Do you know, most of these I just don't agree with. I hate them.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing is, for me, there's a few things that I look at in a sense of, and I think other people should look at. The first thing you've got to identify is what kind of investor are you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you a momentum investor? Are you a dividend investor? Are you a long-term investor? Are you a short-term investor? And so on and so on and so on and so forth. Or in fact, are you a trader? Because traders will be buying and selling all the time. They don't care. But if you're actually an investor, the idea is to buy a stake in that company. You're investing in that company. So you've done your research and you've found out a little bit more about the company than ordinarily you would. Yeah. And you're looking to invest it. Now, you're looking to invest it now for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, or you're looking to invest in that stock for a goal or a catalyst. And once that's happened, you know, you're like, okay, I'm out of it now. I mean, you spoke briefly, Pete, about S4.
Yeah.
If you bought it last year at £2 or £2.50 and it's now nearer to £6 and the PE is now even higher than it was when it was at £2.
Mm.
Yeah, and the revenue growth hasn't really matched up to that. Are you still chasing that in a sense of, like you say, waiting for it to go to £6, £7, £8? Or are you thinking, oh, it's time to get out? Or are you just watching the momentum and thinking, actually, the momentum's still there, so I'm going to continue to hold the stock? Yeah?
Well, like me personally, as I said before, I would be slicing. If I held it and I still thought there was upside, I would slice some off. And just take some risk off the table.
And this is the important element about looking at, why did you buy the stock in the first place? What are you looking for it to achieve? You know, are you actually looking for it to achieve the, you know, that growth where it becomes that £10 billion stock? Because, you know, this is what happened with WPP when, you know, Sir Martin Sorrell was there. He grew it from nothing all the way up there. I mean, granted, he was there a bit longer than he's been in S4, but you know, some people have bought into that story and are looking to be there for the long haul, you know. And
you know that's a really interesting point, because I think, right, this is just complete conjecture based on nothing, right? I think S4 Capital could get to £10, and it more than likely will happen. But I'll tell you another thing. I don't think it's going to go to 10 quid in a straight line. I think it's going to go up to, I don't know, 6, 7, whatever. Then it's going to fall back. Then it's going to get in another uptrend at some point in the future. And I think that's the kind of typical route these things take. They don't get straight up to £10 billion, which is three times where it is now. They don't do that straight away. Well, they do sometimes, but it's incredibly rare. Do you see what I'm saying?
I completely agree with you. And this is why, I mean, it's a bit like buying, Pete. There's no right or wrong answer to when to sell, right? It's a very personal thing, right? So you have to decide, why did you buy it in the first place? And what's the price of it now? And am I happy with the profit that I've made? And if you're happy with the profit you've made, there's nothing wrong with you trimming, selling, or whatever. And one of the main reasons why people decide to trim or to reduce or to sell out is to rebalance something, you know, in their portfolio. Yes. If it gets too big in their portfolio and they've got that, you know, quite fixed mentality, you know, these stocks in my portfolio, I'm not going to allow them to become anything bigger than 5% of my portfolio or 10% of my portfolio, because I'm not going to allow that risk. And each time it gets to 5% or 10%, they reduce it accordingly. And at some point or other, they might decide to sell out. Yeah. So that's one way of looking at it. The other reasons why people sell is because that company has been sitting in their portfolio. It's done reasonably well, but it's now things are cooling off and they spot a better opportunity either in the same niche or a completely different niche of the market. And they decide to sell that particular company that they've got and then buy something new. Or, as has happened to me recently, a couple of stocks do well and decide to get rid of them. But the other aspect of it is when there's a profit warning. Yeah? A profit warning comes and it hits the stock by, and it goes down 15, 20, 25%. I'm then thinking, you know what? Is this a significant profit warning which is going to keep the company at these levels for more than a year and a half or whatever? Or is it something where they can go back and win back those contracts or do even better from a lower base? So then I might decide to add or I might decide to get out. I mean, the way I look at it is, if there's something to do with accountancy, Pete,
or even
a hint of fraud, I'm out, I'm gone, bye-bye. I don't care if I've done 20 hours research on it or 100 hours research. If there's a hint of fraud or accountancy stuff, I'm out of there. You know, so that's my trigger. But you have to find, I suppose the point I'm trying to make is that you have to find your own rules as to why you're selling. Don't allow someone else to influence you buying or selling a share. And, you know, circumstances change. So it doesn't matter how much you love that company or whether it's a massive part of your portfolio or not. You've got to take it and be objective and decide, actually, things have changed with this company, or actually it is overvalued. So therefore I'm selling. Yeah, so to think about that. I think the other last thing I'd say as well is that, and this might be the reverse of selling, when you're thinking of buying a stock, that new stock, because you've sold something, and lots of people are talking about this stock and this stock is going up, ask these people on Twitter or social media, what's their average buying price for this stock that they keep talking about and they keep buying, right? Because if that stock's gone from £3, to £23 and they've been buying it all the way, maybe their average price is £15. Yeah, maybe their average price is £20 for all the buying that they've been doing. But it's very rare that people say, actually, this is the price that I bought it originally, because the share price has gone up 300, 400%. And they're still encouraging people to buy in that stock. And maybe that's what they shouldn't be doing. They should be saying, actually, my average price is there. Would I buy it now? No, but I'm happy to keep it. I'm holding it still.
See, I think this comes back to a really fundamental point that, you know, if you're buying something because someone else is talking about it, then you're just a copycat. You're not, I mean, I don't, you know, I don't want to say you should never copy anyone. And you know, there are, I mean, I copy ideas. I get loads of good ideas from other people, but I then take those ideas and they go through my own analysis and filtering and how they fit in the portfolio and all that kind of stuff. I never just buy something because someone else bought it who's a great investor. I know many great investors, some really good ones, and they buy stocks all the time, but I'm not going to buy it just because they bought it. And they might even say to me, Pete, you should look at this stock. I'm still going to take it away and properly analyze it. I'm not just going to willy-nilly buy it. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong. I think a lot of people won't trust their own judgment. And it's almost like they need that confirmation bias of someone else telling them what to buy. And I think that's a habit you've really got to get out of. You've got to make your own decisions. You've got to do your own analysis. It doesn't matter what someone else paid for a stock, in the sense that each stock that you're looking at must stand up on its own merits. It's got to be a great company. It's got to be, you know, having upward momentum or whatever it's doing. And it's still got to have an attractive valuation. If it doesn't have that kind of stuff, then, you know, you shouldn't be looking at it.
It's a very, very good point, mate. You've made it well there. The other thing I would say as well, Pete, with regards to people looking for ideas, I think it's important to qualify as well who and whom these ideas are coming from.
Exactly,
Because there are some people, and you and I know several, that are really, really good at researching stocks. They're really, really good at writing articles about certain stocks. There's good people that are writing various different magazines that we know, that write really good articles, do deep research, you know, including my good friend Phil Oakley at Investors Chronicle, and Algie Hall as well. And Mary McDougall, who's writing some fantastic stuff as well. There's some really, really good people out there. And, you know, I learned a lot of my tech savviness from Steve Fraser at Shares Magazine, you know, and that's the person that got me really, really deep into tech stocks. And I'll always be grateful for Steve for that. So to all of that, there's so much information out there now. I think it's important that we all take the time that we've got. And some people haven't got time because of busy lives and all the rest of it. But you know what? If we can spend as much time as we spend on Twitter, we can take the time as well to read a book, to read a bit of research, to find out a bit more about the stock. You know, because there's some companies out there, people don't even know who the CEO and CFO are, or the different subsidiaries of the company, but they bought it because they saw one tweet about it and one person that they liked said it was a good stock. And then the next minute, it's down 25, 35, 40% in a heartbeat. And they're going,
And they're wondering why,
And they're wondering why. So just think, you've got to be careful out there and just, you know, take the time to know where your money's going. I think the important bit that always sticks in my mind is something my greatest mentor ever shared with me, and this is my dad, right? Is that when I first started investing, Pete, right, it was a case of, okay, how much have you spent on that, right? And I'd say, he's like, really? You spent that much?
Was your dad an investor?
He's got one stock in his portfolio, Pete, and it's a company he worked for I think it was 42 years, right? And he has got Croda shares, right? Wow. And when he was in the company, he was investing whatever per month, and he'd get one free share for everyone he bought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And CRDA,
yeah. And I've always liked the company. But something in the back of my mind was, I refused to buy the share ever because he was getting it essentially at half price. So I always refused to buy it, and it's done phenomenally well. And he sits there and he chuckles to himself every single time. But the thing my dad was saying to me as well, and this goes back to the hours of research for me now, right, Pete, is that if you think about how much you buy a stock for, some people are buying stocks and investing £500, right? Mm-hmm. Some people are investing £5,000. And he said to me one day, and it stuck in my head, right? How much time did it take you to earn that amount of money? And if you broke that down to every hour, I would ask everybody that's out there that's listening to this podcast, male, female, wherever you are in the world, have a think about the largest stock purchase you've made, or amount you've got invested in that one stock, and break it down to when you last work. How many hours of work and toil did you have to do to get that money after you paid all your tax and expenses? And you'll be surprised. You go, whoa. Then take a step back and think, how much time did I spend to research that stock before I made that sizable investment? That'll get you thinking.
Really good point. Really good point. So I was just looking at the Croda share chart, just out of interest. And on a 3-year chart, 1-year chart, if you like, it's just broken out. So it looks to me like technically it looks like it's going to go higher. I mean, I don't know anything particularly about the company or the valuation or whatever, But if you're holding Crota, I wouldn't be selling it yet because it looks like it's probably going to go higher.
Yeah, whenever I speak to him, I said, "Oh, Dad, I've been keeping your eye on your Crota shares." He's like, "Don't need to keep an eye on them for me, Pete. I'm doing all right. You know what I mean?"
And he never looked.
I've been saying to him for years, I said, "Are you reinvesting them dividends?" And it only, by every other dividend he gets, he reinvests it. I'm thinking, you're worth an absolute fortune now. You know what I mean?
Joe, it's funny actually, because there's a very good reason for you not investing in Crota, and that is simple diversification, isn't it?
Well, the bizarre thing is, Pete, up until I was about what? I mean, bearing in mind I left home at 15, Pete, and I didn't really get on with him back then, right?
Yeah.
I knew he worked at Crota. I didn't even know what that Crota was a share or a company that was listed. Didn't know anything about it until, you know, I was in my 20s and I started talking to him a bit better and we got on a bit better. And then I was like, whoa, how many of those you got? Crazy, mate.
Did that get you into investing a bit?
Not at all.
Okay. Yeah.
Not at all. I shared my story and how I got invested in the Investors Chronicle interview that I did with John Newman and Phil Oakley. And to cut a long story short, I just saw a chap. Yeah. No, I'll tell you just one little synopsis of it, Pete. I was in the Royal Air Force on a train going back from King's Lynn to Manchester, long journey on the train, different trains, different kind of chop and change, all the rest of it. And I saw somebody with a very large pink paper.
Ah, the Financial Times.
Right.
Hey. So it was either that or the Gay Times. I'm not sure.
don't be like that, mate. Yeah. And that was, we're going back to, oh, crikey. 91, maybe 1990, Pete, when I first saw that paper. 91, 92. I'm losing track now. It's that time of day of the day when I first saw that, and I've been consuming every book I could get hold of ever since, mate.
Wow.
That's how I got into investing.
Because when you look at the Financial Times as a non-investing person or as a kid or whatever, it just looks like gobbledygook, doesn't it? It just looks like total nonsense.
I loved maths, and also on the back was fractions and numbers and fractions and numbers. And I was thinking, what does all this mean? And that was me hooked, mate, from then on.
Does it, you know, like the Financial Times, can you still buy like the paper copy, do you know?
I believe so, yeah.
Does it still print like all the share prices and stuff?
I believe so. I've not physically bought my own copy for a long time.
Yeah, I haven't. I've never. Well,
yeah, I think they are. It's just so traditional. Because remember, you used to go into all these financial firms, it'd always be there in the foyer. You know, always be a copy of the FT in the foyer.
Yeah. Well, where I used to work at Fujitsu, they used to have a copy of it, in the waiting area. And I used to quite often go there and have a little nose at it, you know.
Yeah, most definitely.
Wow, better than working. But hide down there for half an hour.
Did you want to cover a little? I mean, you've been asking me and badgering me for weeks now. Do you want to cover a little bit of this spread betting thing, or do you want to leave?
We need to talk a bit about spread betting, because I've had a lot of people asking me about it, because I sort of do it completely weird how everyone else does it. And I think one of the things I find strange with spread betting is that a lot of people are very good stock investors and share investors, yeah? And then they decide they're going to do spread betting, and all of a sudden they become a trader. And I find that a bit strange, and it doesn't really make any sense to me. So what I try to do is basically I try to treat my spread bets like I treat my shares. So the main thing I'll do is I effectively create a mirror portfolio out of spread bets. So I have my, say I've got my normal portfolio with, say, 40 stocks in it, yeah? In theory, what I would do is replicate that as spread bets. Now, obviously, you can do it different sizes. I think for me personally, I think I'd probably do about half the size in spread bet exposure as I would in normal shares. So let's say, for instance, say I bought some shares in British Aerospace, you know, BAE Systems. If shares in BAE Systems, BA dot, yeah? If I bought normal shares in there, let's say for argument's sake, I bought 10 grand's worth, 10,000 quid's worth of BA normal shares, I would then buy £5,000 worth, so half the amount, £5,000 worth equivalent of spread bets, yeah, which is basically the share price times the amount per point that you're betting on it, yeah. So what I'm doing is like I'm recreating another portfolio, but as spread bets. Now you're going to say to me, well, what's the point of that? Well, what it means is that if you use spread bets, you get the advantages of leverage, of gearing. So to buy 5,000 pounds worth of normal shares, you would need 5,000 pounds. To buy 5,000 pounds worth of spread bets, you'd probably only need 1,000 quid as your margin deposit. And if the shares go up or if the shares go down, you have the same impact as if you had normal shares. So it gives you really nice leverage. It's also tax-free. And it also has the big advantage that when you get it right and when you make your spread bet portfolio work, it throws off cash like you can't imagine. So for me personally, who, you know, I don't work or anything, and I rely on my income that I get from investing in shares and things. One of the problems with a normal share portfolio is that you have to sell shares to get your hands on cash. Yeah. So you sell the shares, it becomes cash, you then take the cash out of your portfolio. With spread bets, when they do well, and you've got to know what you're doing, you have to manage your total exposure rigidly, and I'll talk about that more in the future, I'm sure. It throws off cash. So you can just easily take out chunks of cash, which is what I do, but you must monitor the situation. I have a limit. So let's say, for argument's sake, keep it simple. Let's say I had a limit of, say 100,000 quid would be my limit of spread bet exposure. So if I'm doing well, let's say I started the year on 80,000 pounds of long exposure, which is made up of loads of individual shares, yeah? I've got that total exposure of spread bets of 80,000 pounds. If it then did well and it kept going up and it got to 100,000 pounds of exposure, if it went over, I would then be selling some of the spread bet positions, because it's so dangerous to let it get over your limit and to lose control of it. So
is that you trying to manage the risk or the levels of exposure there, Pete, is it?
Totally, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Because if you let it run away, it will absolutely kill you, you know? Because it's very easy. You know, you start off with, say, 80,000 quid's worth of long exposure. It gets up to 100. You're doing really well. Gets up to 120. You're doing really well. Gets up to 130, 140. It's climbing and climbing and climbing. Your risk is climbing and climbing and climbing and climbing. When something goes wrong, when the markets crash, which they inevitably will, you're going to get yourself absolutely killed. So you've got to manage that exposure.
So that's when you get your margin calls and so on and so forth. I think my concern with the spread betting bit, and why I've been reluctant to talk about it on this particular podcast, being an investing podcast, Pete, but also about the old nuances of it, is that these spread betting companies, the vast majority of them, their margins, their profit margins are huge, because they are profiting and profiteering from us, you, me, and everybody else that does spread bet, losing. There's far more people that I see on Twitter talking about spread bet losses than there are winners, you know.
Well, that's exactly it, and it comes back to what I said before. I think if you treat it like you treat your normal shares, and this is on the assumption that you are normally a pretty solid, pretty decent share investor, if you treat it exactly the same way and do it as exposures and have a diverse portfolio of spread bets, I think that's where a lot of people go wrong, right? If you had a share portfolio, you would hold, I don't know, 20, you know, 15, 20, 30, 40 stocks, whatever you hold in your portfolio, yeah? For some reason, when people start doing spread bets, they'll only have one or two bets. So that's like having your share portfolio with just two stocks in it. Well, you wouldn't do it, would you? Yet for some reason, once you start doing spread bets, you start doing that. And the problem with that is if you adopt an approach of just having these individual bets, you lose all the diversification benefits which normally naturally occur in your portfolio. So let's put it this way, right? If I talk about any individual share that I hold, I never know from one year to the next which of my shares will do well and which of my shares will do badly. I haven't got a clue. I like to think that majority of the shares I buy will do okay and some of them will do badly, and that's just the way it is. But I can't really identify which ones are which very well. So what I do know is that I have a track record going back many, 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 many years that I'm achieving around 10% on my normal share portfolio. So all the shares combined generate me 10%. How that's made up, I've no idea, yeah? But I'm getting that 10% return. But the point is, if you're getting that same 10% return on a spread bet portfolio, and it's slightly more complicated because you've got interest rates and things like that that come into it as well. You have an interest charge. But if you're doing 10% on your normal portfolio, there's no reason why you can't do 7% on the exposure in your spread bet portfolio. If you're doing 7% on the exposure, that actually equates to probably 40, 50% capital return on the deposit and cash you're using.
So let me ask the question that most people are going to want me to ask you then, Pete.
Yeah.
Given you're looking at 10% across your portfolio investing wise, what's your return or what's your average return over the past whatever time frame you want to use for your spread betting account? What sort of returns have you been averaging there?
Right. I've been hampered in the last 2 years. Last year I did well in my spread bet account. This year now I'm doing very nicely in my spread bet account. For the 2 years before that, I was hampered because I was doing loads of experiments in how to hedge. Now, we'll talk about hedging in another podcast probably. Yeah, I've written about hedging to a massive extent on my website. If you go to the educational blogs page and go to the category hedging, there's just absolutely loads written about it. So the hedging skewed what I was doing, yeah? If you were to strip out the hedging aspect of what I was doing, I would suspect that that portfolio was doing 30, 40% a year return on capital employed.
Okie dokie.
Now, as we speak, yeah, mm-hmm. As we speak, my share portfolio is probably up about, say, 13%, 14% for this actual year, yeah. My spread bet portfolio is up about 35% return on capital.
Okay.
But I have had a few hedge trades, and of course the challenge with hedge trades, if they're there to protect my portfolio, yeah. If they go wrong, I'm getting a hit. I'm losing money on them because the stop losses are getting hit, or I'm closing them early, whatever. So I've had a few where I've had that hit. But the reason I hedge is it actually enables me to take on more long exposure in my spread bet account with less capital being used. Right. But I think I need to explain that in a future podcast.
No, I get that, Pete. I think it comes back to experience again, doesn't it? You know, and I think one of my concerns is, you know, we were speaking earlier about idle hands, and I think lots of people have got into trading, and some of them have gone into spread betting over the past year because they've been at home and they've got cash and they're looking for things to do to occupy the time. So a few more people have got into it. And I think I was saying on the last podcast, what I don't want to happen to some of these individuals is that they get into investing or trading or whatever, and they take deeper and deeper and higher risk, and they lose out and they miss out on the opportunity to actually become good long-term investors because they get, you know, they get beaten down by the experience that they, the short experience they've got, which is not a good one, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that happens with a lot of people. And I think it comes back to, again, what I was saying, that it's like, for some strange reason, once we get a spread bet account, we all become traders.
Yeah.
Normally we wouldn't do that. And if you, I mean, You could. I mean, I'm to be fair, I'm not perhaps as rigid as I should be. And what I mean by that is, perhaps in an ideal world, what I should do is when I buy Vodafone shares, yeah, straight away, I should buy a long Vodafone spread bet at the same time, yeah. What I've tended to do in practice, and I probably fool myself that this is a good idea, yeah, is I tend to buy the Vodafone shares, I then give it a little bit of space and see what's happening, and if I see it starting to move up, I then buy the Vodafone spread bet. Now, that may not be the optimal way of doing it, and I might be better off just doing a straight mirror as best I can. But that's, you know, something to ponder.
Okie dokie. Well, we can always come back to this, Pete, to talk
about... Yeah, I just reiterate... we'll come back to the future. I just want to reiterate some key points, and that the key point is you have to understand your exposure. If you have a spread bet account or a CFD account, any kind of leverage trading, if you do not understand exposure, you should stop doing it now, because you are going to get your ass so kicked. And what I mean by that is you need to know the individual exposures to the long side or the short side of the individual positions, yeah? And you need to know the overall long exposure or the overall short exposure of all the spread bets together of the spread bet portfolio. And the thing is, it's easy. It's like if you're with IG Index, every night they send you a PDF which tells you all these numbers. And right at the top, it tells you what your long exposure is, and it breaks down all the individual exposures. So there is no excuse for not knowing your exposure.
Okie dokie, Pete. Well, that we'll cross that as part one. Then I'm not sure how many parts this will take, but we'll. Yeah. I think that's a good beginning, Pete, to give people some heads up on that. Before we've got a couple of things we want to talk about, some stocks. We've already done an hour, Pete, so we're going to give it about another 10-15 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, mate.
There are two individuals that I keep meaning to give a shout out to that are on SoundCloud. I'm not sure they're on Twitter. They're on our SoundCloud platform, and one of them goes by the name of Stone Circles, and the other one is a lady by the name of Carol Mull Downey. Just wanted to say thank you both for your continued support and all of the listens that you've given our podcast. I think Carol may be the person that's lifting all the numbers in Ireland for us.
So excellent.
The numbers of people listening in Ireland has gone up incrementally over the past couple of months. So I just wanted to make sure I keep forgetting to say thank you to Stone Circles and Carol Modowney. So if you're listening again on the SoundCloud platform, thank you ever so much. Pete, I want you to talk very, very quickly about a stock, and I'm going to be doing this over the next couple of podcasts, or a few podcasts going forward, until I've covered all my stocks, and I'm going to be away for the summer in a sense of not talking about any of the stocks that I own anymore for a good while. And this is a stock that everyone knows, so I'm not going to go into detail about it, and it's called Polar Capital. It's a fund management company, and the reason why I purchased this was that I went and met with the management very, very early last year, and I just liked what they were up to, and I loved the fact they're in all the different small caps and tech and all the different space. And then of course early last year it was tickety boo, and everything then went wrong, not just for Polar Capital but every company, in March and April. So I actually made a purchase of Polar Capital at £4.27 on the 1st of June of 2020, and I've held it since then, and they came out with some reasonable results. The assets under management's going up, they're paying a dividend and all the rest of it. So it's one I bought basically as a correlation to the market, really. So if the markets do well, Polar Capital and fund management companies should do well. I've already got Premier Miton, now I've got Polar Capital, and I've got one other fund management company which I'll talk about another time. But that's one of the ones that that I've wanted to disclose to you, ladies and gents, that I've got.
That's POLR.
Yeah, that's
just
correct.
Noticed that it's paying 4.3% historic dividend. I don't know what the future dividend is, but I mean, that's that's attractive. The other thing I know is that it's just broken out on a three-year chart. So that's quite a positive bullish sign. I mean, really, with markets really perky, and with one of their big funds being PCT, which I hold, Polar Capital Technology Trust, you know, you can see that one is doing going with the markets, isn't it, obviously?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting company, Pete. I bought it, obviously, for the dividend, and you know I've got no love for banks. So that was me trying to get a financial, you know, sort of bit of edge there, to use your words, regarding that. And the funny thing was, I was asked by, Proactive Investor, the platform, to choose a stock as my stock of the year. So I've chose that, but I'm up against lots of fund managers and all the rest of it. You know, I think I'm in, I was second to last out of, I think, 8 or 9 people on the first quarter. So I'm hoping that the share price does a bit better going forward. But, you know, for me, it's a stock that I'm going to hold beyond the year and probably a lot longer than that for the dividend, because I want to be able to just sleep at night and just compound the performance in my portfolio. And it goes back to us, there's the rule of 72, Pete.
Yes.
So how long does it take your investment to double? And if it goes up 7.2%, it would have doubled in 10 years. Rule of 72.
And what was it? If it would take 7.2 years if it goes up 10% a year.
10%. Yeah.
Yeah, and to all that. Mate, we mustn't forget a couple of quick things. If you hit the subscribe button on whatever podcast platform you're using, then it doesn't cost you a penny. It's all for free. And basically, you should get a notification when the new podcasts come out. I mean, this one, if all goes to plan, should be out. Well, you should be listening to this probably next weekend. But the other thing I need to mention quickly is that if you're interested in using SharePad or ShareScope, you can actually sign up for it through us, because we're sponsored by them, which is fantastic. Thank you to SharePad and ShareScope for that. If you go to their subscribe page, if you want to start using it, and if you type in Twin Pete's in the promo code box, then you can get a discount. You get 1 month's discount on the data, and we get a little payment for that. So thank you very much for that. We've had quite a few, so thank you for people who've signed up. That's fantastic, and we really appreciate it. And so does my taste for beer appreciate it.
Beer tokens are being collected, Pete.
Now, Pete, I've been able to get to the pub much.
Mate, I didn't tell you this, did I? I had my day out, mate. I had that first Monday.
So jealous.
The first day that the pub's open, I shocked the wife, because you know me, I'm always got my head down working and doing this, that and the other, and chasing this and doing this for charity and doing that. I was like, you know what? I said, on a Sunday night, she thought I was drunk, I think, you know. I said, you know what? Tomorrow, I said, we're going to go out. We're going to go out for the afternoon. And she's like looking at me going, it's a Monday. I'm going, nah.
Look, you're horrified.
We're going to stop. We're just going to go out. And my daughter was still off school as well. So we just, the three of us just went out for the day. It was brilliant. It was really nice just watching the world go by,
Sounds good.
Most of the schools near where we are were back at school, and my daughter was still off, so we had the place, lots of places to ourselves, so it was great.
Mate, I've got a couple other stocks if you want to hear.
Go for it mate, fire them through.
None of these I hold. This one that has taken my interest is Cakebox, CBOX.
Yep.
You know, that's the one that does vegan cakes and stuff, like cream cakes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, their last trading update was pretty good. And I think there's a good little growth stock there, a bit of a rollout story with new stores and stuff. Any thoughts on that one?
I've looked at it a couple of times, Pete. And I think the interesting thing about it for me now is that in lockdown, you couldn't go here and you couldn't go there, you couldn't go parties or anything like that. But they were still producing cakes and sending them out and doing and delivering them and all the rest of it. I think as things open up more, people are going to want to celebrate just the opening up and being able to see each other more. Yeah. And what better way to do it than to take, not just take a bottle of something or a case of something, but take a nice cake. So I can see that actually doing okay. It could be actually a play on things reopening. It could actually energize sales going forward rather than some companies which have been lockdown plays. I think they could be impacted. I think that could be one that actually does positively out of people having more time to actually spend with each other.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny one for me personally. I don't hold it. One of the quandaries I have, apart from the fact that I used to hold, remember that patisserie Valerie that went...
Oh, mate, yeah, that stirs up some bad memories for some people, mate.
I lost mint on that, and that was upsetting. And obviously, that has the word... That was cake, so it's sort of, you know...
You can't taint every company that has the word cake in it.
Oh, but mate, it's just given me this psychological problem. But anyway, the other thing is I hold Hotel Chocolate, HOTC.
Of course,
and I sort of think... That's a little bit similar, and you know, I don't really like having too many things that are too similar in my portfolio. It just doesn't seem much point. So anyway,
can you have your cake and eat the chocolate? You can.
You can have your cake and eat it. I see
that's,
where you go.
That's my bit on that phrase.
Hey, I've got another joke for you. I've got to do it.
No,
I got to do it. Right, here's my joke. Right. Oh. I heard this.
Are you going to talk about more stocks, mate?
I heard this on Steve Wright today, and it so made me giggle. Basically, right, I've ordered a chicken and I've ordered an egg from Amazon, and I'll let you know.
Oh my gosh!
Anyway, right, the other one I want to mention quickly. I think it's called AQX. I think is the code.
Aqueous Exchange.
Is that it? AQX. Yeah, Aqueous Exchange. Yeah. Now, what it is? This is a weird one, right? Because I'm not sure I want to invest in it, and I'm not sure that anyone should invest in it or whatever. I've just, to be honest, I don't really know. But I saw it at one of those Mellow events on Mellow Monday that David Streda does, Act Carmen's fella, and it was just like I said, there could be an investing opportunity. I really don't know. Yeah, but there's a wider point, and that is that this Aqueous Exchange, they've got some sort of like stock exchange thing going on in France and whatever, and it seems a bit of a fintech play as well. But what they're doing is they bought what used to be the sort of market below AIM. Yeah, can you imagine? There's a market below AIM, and it used to be called OFX, and I think the last name was Plus Markets.
Yeah,
it's had all sorts of names and all sorts of iterations. But Aqueous Exchange has actually bought it. And listening to the CEO and the plans he's got for it, the things, you know, they want to make it like AIM, like a proper serious market. And they've got, you know, they're doing arrangements with all sorts of like brokers and stuff, like, I don't know, like AJ Bell and Hargrave Lansdown. You should be able to buy shares through Aqueous Exchange through Hargrave Lansdown, same you can with AIM or whatever, and they're trying to sort of go that way and make it into, like, you know, something really amazing. So my point is, even if you don't necessarily think it's a good investment, what I'm saying is it could be a big change happening in the way markets are the markets and stuff are structured, and that perhaps there's going to be a whole host of companies. If it's by the old standards of OFX and stuff, I wouldn't want to go near them with yours, you know. But if it's like some decent companies on there, it could be more stocks, you know, potential to invest in or whatever. But we need to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, Pete, because I think they're trying to encourage a lot of the tech sort of small, innovative sort of companies, attracting them to their platform. You know, I've heard someone mute that they want to become the Nasdaq of the London market. You know, essentially that's what they are. They're an exchange for people to place their IPOs on. So, yeah, it's done well. It IPO'd in 2018. Placing price of 269, giving it a market cap of 73 million. Now the shares are £6.90-ish or there or thereabouts, and it's got what's the market cap now? 187. So it's come a long way in a very short space of time. Mm. It's up 1 year return 67%, nearly 68%. year to date up 50%. So it's done well. It's been, had a good run since last August, from 3.20 to £6, nearly £7 now. So it's doubled in the past 9 months or so. So it's had a really, really, really good run. Could it go higher? Yeah. I mean, more IPOs on there, more generated revenue for them. So, you know, so yeah, it's had a good run. It's done a lot of marketing as well over that space of time.
I think it's probably quite a risky one. So I think if anyone were, I mean, I'm not sure if it'd be something I'd buy. I think for me personally, there's other stocks that interest me more that are a lot lower risk and I'd far rather own. But I just think it's an interesting little one, and maybe people put a little bit of their portfolio and it don't go mad on it, you know. I don't know. At the end of the day, people have to make their own decisions. We're not able to give them any.
I think the thing about it for me will be, what do they attract? Yeah, if they start attracting the SPACs of the world and the big tech and innovative companies of the world, and they're choosing, rather than going on the FTSE or the AIM, and they go on there, that could really, 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 really grow, Pete. But they've tried this platform, you know, it was always called a third tier or something like that when it was called OFX, and it's failed countless times. This is the best start that this new one has got. So whether it's down to the CEO and the management, I don't know. But they've got off to a good start since they IPO'd in 2018. Long may it continue, because I think the beauty of it is that if a good company goes on there and it opts to then move up to AIM or move across to the London FTSE, then it's better for keeping innovative companies in the UK. And that's what I'm happy about, because I don't want our companies to be listed on NASDAQ, really. If they can be here and they can grow and can be nurtured, that's better for us, you know.
Totally.
And people getting jobs with them as well.
No, I think it's an interesting development, and whether it's an investment or not is another decision. But just for anyone involved in the markets, it's something to keep tabs on. It, you know, could be more opportunities in the future for trading.
Absolutely, mate. Always got to keep tabs on everything. Mm. Now, Pete, we're 1 hour and 16 minutes in, mate. Do you want to say something closing? What do you want to say?
I think we're pretty much done. I mean, the only one, okay, I'll throw one in really fast, right? I don't hold it. Acrol, ACRL. It's had a good run. It's the one that does tissues, you know, bog roll and stuff. Yeah, yep. Kitchen towels, whatever. It listed on the market with a different management. It went really messy, horrible mess. It's got new management. It's totally transforming the business. I was looking at a forecast on it the other day, and it actually looks quite good value when you look at the forecast and stuff. So I'm just highlighting it. I don't own it. Have a look if you want it.
Okay, I'm going to share with you one of my favorite Peter Kay jokes.
Okay? Oh, here we go.
Here we go. Right, you ready?
I'm going to try not to laugh. I'm going to go silent at the end.
A cement mixer collided with a prison van on the Kingston bypass. Motorists are asked to be on the lookout for 16 hardened criminals.
Oh dear. Oh no. Oh, I'm in pain. Oh, my stomach pain's come back really bad.
Oh dear. Laughing. There you go, folks. You've had one joke from Pete, or two jokes from Pete now. He's done a second one. You've had one from me. I'm hoping that you will never hear me share another joke on this podcast. So I will give you my apologies now. Oh dear. Ladies, gents, that's a wrap for Twin Peaks Investing 47. I hope you enjoyed Pete's brief synopsis on spread betting. He's going to be talking a bit more about that going forward. I hope you enjoyed some of the stuff we talked about regarding various stocks and our thoughts on them. Please stay safe. Please enjoy the improving weather and the restrictions being lifted wherever you are. And if you can, as I always say at this time in the podcast, please do what you can for someone else. Do something unconditional. Just show some kindness, show some love, and do what you can in your communities for anybody that you possibly can. And if you can do it without them even knowing that you're doing it, that's even better. Just go out there and do what you can, and just make sure you look after yourselves as well. Because, you know, we've all got stresses that other people don't even know about. So if you need some help, just reach out and just try and help somebody else. But also ask somebody for help if you're there and you're isolated. Pete?
That's it, mate. Fantastic. Thanks for listening, everybody. And I'll speak to you next time.
Okay, everyone. Ladies and gents, take care. God bless. We look forward to speaking to you again soon. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing podcast was brought to you in association with SharePad, from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.